Hello, Adam here. Before we get started on this week's episode, I want to talk to you about some music that isn't REM. I want to talk to you about the band Small Miracles from Cardiff, okay? I really like this band. They're a new wave kind of band, but then they bring in all these elements of punk and glam and grunge. I mean, Talking Heads meets Pixies? The Cure meets Queens of the Stone Age, maybe that kind of thing. It's difficult to describe, which I think is the case for all of the best bands. If you're a fan of Manic Street Preachers, Radiohead, Muse, REM, I mean, most of the music that we've covered on this podcast, if you like it, there's a good chance that you will like Small Miracles. And I've got some good news for you, because they are about to make their long-form debut. Having released a bunch of singles, they're about to release Live at Rockfield EP on Dirty Carrot Records. And this is an EP of four tracks that were captured in whole takes live in the studio. And they kind of showcase the range of the band, as well as that sort of tight intensity that they've kind of built their live reputation on. You don't necessarily have to take my word for it. They're playing Beneath Me right now. That's the music you can hear. Why don't I just shut up and we can hear a bit of that? I think that sounds great. That's just one of the four tracks on this EP. The EP can be streamed on all platforms, like all music can these days. But if you want to do something a little bit more special, you can search Small Miracles Dirty Carrot, Small Miracles Dirty Carrot, and you can order a copy of the vinyl of the EP. And all proceeds from that vinyl will fund the band's upcoming debut album. So that's pretty cool. But whichever way you listen to it, I hope you enjoy it. Live at Rockfield EP by Small Miracles. Go and have a listen. Look, we obviously don't know which way it's going to go. Adam is a good name. Just saying. Is that a good name? Adam.
Strong name. The first name.
Yeah.
It's fine.
The name. It's basically the name. Yeah.
It's fine.
Now, if you wanted to name anybody after a famous actor or famous podcaster or me, you'd say Adam Scott is a good name, you know? But it feels like it's lacking something. Doesn't it feel like it's missing something? Doesn't it feel like
it's missing a whole two syllable
something? Adam Scott Glasspool Way. Oh,
get rid of the way.
Get rid of the way. Get rid of it.
Get rid of it. It's too cumbersome.
Get rid of the way. Get rid of the way. And then if it's, you know, if it's not a boy, not that we love to assign gender roles at birth, but you know, you got to call him something. Stephanie Murphy's pretty good as well, I reckon. It's not bad.
Yeah. It's all right. We're just gonna call it. Don Gibbon or whatever his name was.
Don Gibbon. Right. So tell me, what is the link that you are making here?
Between Don Gibbon
and an animated frog.
And an animated frog. Yeah. Right. It's a very direct link, actually. And I'm impressed that my brain just obviously had this knowledge buried really deep into the back.
We've all been impressed with your brain for
into the back
reasons.
Of my mind, right? So
I've just had a tweet about that. I've had a tweet from someone who said, "I'm fascinated by the workings of Lucas's mind."
So what's the context of that tweet? Because what episode came out today? Murmur part one.
And it's the bit they've summed up your position in this quote, which apparently is something close to what you said. "I want to know there are discernible lyrics there so that I can ignore them."
It's a good quote.
Fascinating guy.
That is very funny.
Anyway, so carry on. What's the link you're making here?
Right. In the video game, The Legend of Zelda, Majora's Mask. There's a bit where you conduct a choir of frogs.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
With a song. That game's all about collecting masks. Often the mask is like the spirit of a person that, like, So they'll leave their mask that's like their face after they've died or something, right?
Sure. Okay.
And the conductor of all of the frogs, is also a frog, and he's called Don Gero.
Right. Okay.
And he's
so
a frog,
he's an animated frog.
Yeah. And there's a very direct link that I hadn't thought about in years, and I didn't even know I'd made the link until I then was like, "There's something there about Don Gemmon."
Yeah.
And it came out of my brain. I wonder if anyone got it in the week.
Well, we'll find out, won't we? We'll have to...
Well, it's been a week. You can tell everyone right now. So who got it, Lucas?
Well, I don't know, because it's November. No, it's November 27th.
Announce the winner. Announce the winner, Lucas.
I mean, probably Mental Jargon.
Yeah, probably.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
He's a detective. He'll suss out everything to do with this podcast. He probably got it, I reckon.
That's fair enough, yeah. Hello. And welcome to What Is Music, a music podcast about music. We are a podcast that focuses on discographies in their entirety, doing deep dives on one artist at a time. You join us for season 6, which is called Are We Enjoying This? A critical analysis of the history, cultural impact and music of REM. We're going through their entire career, album by album, track by track, and we're asking questions like, does context matter when you're listening to music? Does knowing the history of an artist affect your appreciation of their output? You really put me off. You made me stumble. I was like, wait, who's saying yes? And this season, we're of course asking, are we enjoying this? And to be clear, we're asking, are we enjoying this in regards to the band REM, not are we enjoying this in regards to this, the 6th season of our podcast, which is called Are We Enjoying This, and which you may or may not be enjoying. I'm Adam Scott Glasspool. I'm a big music nerd. I'm a big fan of REM. And with me, as always, is someone who said they don't care about art or talking about art, doesn't relate personally to music. It's Lucas Way.
Hello, it's me again.
Wrong show. In the middle of that, we have someone who can appreciate context, art, and subject matter, and is just learning how to convey that in the form of words. It's Steve Murphy.
Hello. I forgot how to say it. I forgot how to say hello.
Mate, hello. We might need to take learning how to convey that in the form of words away from your intro. Might be going back even further, mate.
Just have, and now learning words, Steve Murphy.
And now starting to learn words is Steve Murphy. And you just come and go,
Welcome back for another week of this podcast. How are you guys? How are you, Steve? How are you, Lucas? Are you very well?
Since we spoke,
10 minutes.
Since we spoke last week, I went for a wee.
Yeah.
So that took 7 days.
I also went for a wee. Not a big wee. Don't know about you.
Okay.
Pretty small wee. Didn't really need it. Normal, it's just like we were having a break in the podcast. So like you just go for a wee, don't you? Just in case. And
are you at the point now where once you're in bed, you will 100% need to get up one more time just to use the toilet?
Oh yeah.
No.
So you go, you brush teeth, go to the loo, get into bed, and then you think you get ready for bed and get into bed, and then you think, well, I'll just go for a wee just in case. Uh-huh.
No, get up and do another one.
Yeah.
Brush my teeth, go for a wee. I'm in bed within 30 seconds, and I don't need another wee.
Wow.
Normally, unless we've done this podcast. Because I think I drink a lot of liquid whilst we're recording.
Right.
You got it,
and
man.
And so I then I'm all fluided up.
Sometimes we're talking for like fluids. 6 hours at a time or something, and it's, you know, players have it.
Drink a lot of fluid. Speaking of, I've
got a squash.
Oh, it's a Pepsi Max podcast, caffeine free.
Of course, the Pepsi.
Do you want to come and kiss me?
Of course, it's a Pepsi Max. Of course, it's a Pepsi Max caffeine free podcast,
right,
isn't it?
Both of you, shut the fuck up! What the fuck was that, Steve? What the fuck was that, mate? Okay, on this podcast, we're exploring the entire discography of REM. We're not even partway through Life's Rich Pageant. We're just partway through our coverage of Life's Rich Pageant. And today we're going to start the track by track. So I can't even ask you where you think we got up to, because we know where we got up to.
For once, we actually had a clean cut.
Yeah. That's why I'm thinking it can't be possible for us to have, like, not done a track or two in a previous episode. Do you know what I mean? Like, because we wouldn't, you know, we have to clean cut.
Like maybe OK Computer.
That's maybe. But I think we still got Airbag done.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think we did.
Is kind of gross, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just doing one track.
This is much neater. Everyone's having a much better time. Anyway.
So I think we got up to, we're going to do track one.
Yeah, I think we got up to
Behind the Bright.
Is that what you've written?
No, it's no way that's what you've written.
That's what I wrote.
That's what you wrote.
So when I wrote the titles of the track, I looked through the track lists and then I went, yep, track one, Behind the Bright. And just wrote that. And then I just got on with my...
Like, you're just unwell, I think.
I just got on with that. And then I was looking through it again. And then I saw some reference on, like, when I was reading, like, doing research or whatever. They said, like, oh, begin. And I was like, what's that? And then realised that that was Behind the Bright's true name.
Wow.
It says begin so much in the song.
Yeah, yeah. It says it loads in the song.
Is there any one word in the song that I can recognise in the lyrics?
Was it begin, was it?
Hand.
I mean, yeah. The vocals on this are so much clearer. So
yeah, really clear, so I can now ignore them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yeah, of course.
Perfect.
So first of all, we're on side one, which is called...
The dinner side.
The dinner side.
Side two is called the supper side. What's the difference between dinner and supper? What do you reckon?
Supper, I think, is like a little bit later and always cold, I reckon.
No, it's how fucking posh you are.
I don't think I... You might be close on that. You can use supper or dinner synonymously for your evening meal.
Yeah, here we go. But you would never have a cooked supper at lunch, would you? At lunchtime.
No, I mean, so what it is that dinner typically holds a more serious connotation and refers to a heavy, full meal, whereas supper is often used more informally and refers to a light meal eaten at home.
So kind of what I just said, really.
Like, kind of, but you could still have a hot supper. Like, that's...
Example, supper, Christmas Day, you obviously have Christmas dinner, which is at lunchtime-ish, late lunch. Normally.
Roast dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dinner's still in the name, mate. And then maybe 7:30, 8 p.m., you have some supper. And it's just like a bit of cheese, some crackers, some cold turkey, some, you know, whatever, a bit of salmon, all cold, supper.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're onto it. Does it mean anything for the album, side one being called dinner side and side two being called supper side?
First half is more substantial, second half is more cold.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah. The first side is full of hot meat, and the second side is your cold cheeses, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, let's start off with some hot meat. It's Begin the Begin by R.E.M.
Hand. I've written hand.
I've written hand.
H A A A Y Y Y Y N D D D D D.
Oh, and it's interesting. You missed the. In my opinion, you missed a second A there because I wrote H A Y A N D.
Hand.
And demand.
Demand. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So you did get demand as well.
Yeah, a bird in the hand. Life's rich demand.
Now, that's what I thought it was as well. And I don't think it is because I had that revealed to me by a different podcast on the band. But we'll get to it. What are your general thoughts on this? Because I think it fucks.
Yeah, it's fucking great.
Yeah, it's so good.
What a song to open up the album with, right?
Such a rad opener, yeah.
A little riff just to throw you into
it. And that like chugging guitar, it really like... It sets the tone. You know you're in for something a bit heavier than we've had, a bit more rocky, you know? You know what I mean?
don't know if it sounds anything like...
Well, yeah, you say that.
Mr. Stallone's...
Okay, you say that, but at one point, the song literally came out of my headphones with gloves on and punched me, and it had a robot butler that said, "Happy birthday, Paulie." So it was pretty rocky, actually.
That is, yeah, that is
pretty
good
rocky.
Evidence. Yeah, no, fair enough.
The second half get like even picks up even more. It gets a bit more like, meow, 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 meow. And that's what I thought. There's a bit of synth, but there's some kind of.
It's just it's just an organ. It's just an actual analog sort of organ. That riff, we've had riffs from REM before, but they typically last like the length of a couple of bars at least. I'm thinking of like Driver 8 or Talk About the Passion or something like that. This is such a rock riff. It reminds me of Back in Black by AC/DC. You know the bit that goes... It has that kind of vibe to it. And I love that it just keeps stopping to do the riff again. I like it every time it does it as well. I think it's great.
Well, it's nice. It gives a hook to the song is what it does.
Yeah.
It's got like an instantly recognisable bit.
Because it's not structured... Very typically, I struggle to go like, that bit's the chorus. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's helped by the fact that there's words that are repeated or phrases that are repeated, but in different places. So you've got birdie in the hand for life's rich demand, and then later on it says life's rich demand creates supply in the hand. The way it comes out, the begin is kind of all over the place as well. So you kind of come out of sections into other sections. That have happened before, but you don't really expect them to be where they are. Yeah, very cool.
The vocals are very cool. There's loads of like, there's just stuff like Stipe is making like revving up noises, like especially at the beginning. It's like he's ready to get going. He's there going like, he's doing that, which I think
is that why he's going, he's going,
a little bit. There's a bit in the middle where like he's like, oh, we'll talk about
like animal noises.
Yeah, kind of.
You said about it had a weird structure or something. Mm. I'm sure you're probably going to tell us this anyway. I'm sure you've read the same bloody articles as me. Apparently, the original version of it was a minute longer with 5 different choruses, lacking melody, and a bridge.
Yeah.
And it sounds like this is them having the more commercial tendencies to go, no.
Yeah.
Make it more normal.
Trim it down. The other thing was is that they sat around with acoustic guitars writing that. And Peter Buck was going, yeah, now it does this, and then it does this, and then I play the riff again, and then there's another bit that we haven't heard before. And everyone was like, okay. And then the next day, no one could remember how it went. Even Peter Buck was just like, yeah, I've got no idea what we wrote. So, so it might be down to that. Man, it just feels big, and it feels heavy, and it feels urgent. And there's, like you said, Lucas, on the last episode, there's that energy to it. There's a really good translation of the energy as there kind of is across the whole album, and this sets that up really well. I mean, yeah, that bit with the bit with the discordant organ then gives way to Stipe just making noises. He's like panting and taking a deep breath. There's a bit where he's just going like, you can hear him, and it's like it's quite prominent in the mix, and you're like kind of getting pumped with
and
it.
And it's something you would imagine them doing live.
Yes, 100%.
But not normally on a record.
Yeah,
with all the woos and stuff as well. Woo! Like, that's through the whole the whole album. It's got a lot of that, which is really cool.
And it's also a really good indicator. And we're going to go, let's do this, man. It's a good indicator that you're in new lyrical territory, I think. You get the idea of a more political vibe from the first few lines, in my opinion. Here they are. I got them wrong. We already know that. Because I thought it was... A birdie in the hand for life's rich demand. The insurgency began and you missed it. And so I've always equated that to it kind of saying a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
Two in the bush. Like, I don't know what that means, by the way. I've got that written down. Well, what does that mean?
Something close to you that you have possession of is worth more than more of those things that you don't have sight or possession of.
Okay.
Right? Okay. I tell you what, a tenner in my hand is not worth more than 2 tenners.
Then 20 quid in the bush.
Well, might be, because someone else might have the 20 quid. It's about being thankful for what you've got rather than what you don't have, isn't it?
Okay.
Or you've got something valuable, which would tie in here in regards to having something valuable to meet life's rich demand, right? My vague memory is that I'm wrong about that. It's actually 2 hand gestures. It's a birdie and a hand. So it's the middle finger and a round of applause.
Right.
Which I think is a cool way to start. It's quite a confrontational kind of way to start.
That's cool.
And kind of shows, I think that this song has kind of two forces in it that are butting heads and like they are opposed. And in terms of life's rich demand, one would applaud and one would tell it to fuck off. And I know I have the following line correct, which is "the insurgency began and you missed it," which is essentially saying, "We've started the revolution. Where were you?" And it's a song about rising up and taking control and being heard and starting over and standing up for what you think is right. The chorus, in so much as there is a chorus, is "let's begin again, begin the begin. Let's begin again like Martin Luther. Zen, the mythology, begins the begin." Now, he's saying let's start again like Martin Luther, who was a German priest and theologian from the 16th century. And he protested corruption in the Catholic Church and did so by writing the 95 Theses, or Disputation on the Power and Efficacy of Indulgences. It's basically like a list of points to be discussed and debated, like whether or not the Catholic Church should be selling literal tickets to heaven to people. Just sort of like stuff like that.
Yes.
Okay. Lucas is fully on board. At one point, he nailed them to the door of the All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. And the church tried him for heresy and excommunicated him. And this is considered to be the starting point of the arm of Christianity that we call Protestant. A rejection of the authority of the Pope and the Catholic Church. That is a kind of seismic shift in humanity. We have had wars and friction over Catholicism and Protestantism, like close to home in Ireland, right? That's kind of the basis of the Troubles. And it's because this one guy back in the 16th century stood up for something that he believed to be the right thing to do. And then Stipe also mentioned Zen, which is a school of Mahayana Buddhism that greatly influenced the religion moving forward. It's another seismic change in a religion or in humanity. Both of those things are seismic changes, though. In retrospect, Martin Luther didn't know he would be starting a new religious sect by asking for a discussion. Nobody would have predicted that the chanting that the Zen movement brought in would become one of the primary aspects of Buddhism. You know, it's only once these things that have been written about and explored, you can see them as seismic changes. Or in other words, the mythology begins the begin, which is the next line of the song.
I also can't help though, but feel that if you use the words Martin Luther in a song, that most people aren't going to immediately more likely think of Martin Luther King.
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's also, you can draw a line there.
Absolutely draw a line there. Yeah, that's another seismic change, right? There's another historical figure mentioned right at the beginning of the song as well. We've already looked at. Yes, the insurgency began and you missed it. I looked for it and I found it. Miles Standish proud. The only reason that I've ever known, I'm still not reading lyrics, by the way, the only reason that I've ever known that the lyrics was Miles Standish proud is because that's the line that's printed next to the song title on the back of the album. Otherwise, I never would have got it. It's also misspelled. And this is what I was saying about they didn't have Google back in those days. You just had to remember or guess. Miles is actually spelled with a Y, but on the...
Use a book.
On this, it's spelled with an I. I think this is my first tie-in to the album being about America and the American land, and it happens real early. It's in the first sort of section of lyrics. "I looked for it and I found it," to me, refers to two things. Maybe the insurgency from the previous line, but also America itself. Miles Standish was one of the first pilgrims in America. He went over on the Mayflower,
right?
And he was a military officer and led the defense of the Plymouth colony in the 17th century. He's famous for preemptive attacks on the native peoples, and he like led raids into villages and killed Native Americans. The more moderate members of the colony were reported as being disturbed by his brutality. And this song points out his pride. And so maybe I looked for it and I found it is America itself, or maybe it's a fight. He went looking for a fight and he found it. I looked for a fight and I found it. Miles Standish proud. And then the next line is like a sneering, almost sarcastic, congratulate me, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulate me on my latest atrocity. And then there's a line in which Stipe basically presents to you the mundane items of, I guess, bad people. A philanderer's tie, a murderer's shoe. And I think that brings some kind of mundanity to the evil of murder, pointing out that they're just humans, I think. You know, there's like, it's a shoe. We all have shoes. This is a murderer's shoe. Does that imbue it with any kind of different vibe for you? Interestingly, he meant to sing a philanthropist's tie, I think, to counteract the murderer and kind of say that both good and bad is ultimately just human. But he sang Philanderer by accident, and then the band liked it enough to just keep it in.
Philanthropist is very hard to say in a song anyway, right? Don't blame him.
And then the next section is some of the most lucid writing that I think we have had from Stipe so far. Life's rich demand creates supply in the hand of the powers, the only vote that matters. Silence means security. Silence means approval. And I think that's such a brilliant section, and I think it stands, I think it just speaks for itself. I don't think you have to do much work to see what that is saying, right? Life's rich demand creates supply in the hand of the powers, who are the only vote that matters, which is interesting because I don't think we've had a single Michael Stipe lyric yet which speaks for itself. He's being direct, and he's being clear, and he's being upfront, and he's being confrontational. And then the second time, in terms of confrontation, the second time he mentions a philanderer's tie, a murderer's shoe, he follows it up with, the finest example is you, and brings the listener kind of into the song. There is so much more to grip onto just in this song alone than there has been for any of REM's previous lyrics. The analysis that we or I have just done there, that is Manic Street Preachers on the Holy Bible level of stuff, in my opinion. The reference to historical people, bringing in historical events, he's a bit more poetic with it, which I think is why I ultimately prefer Michael Stipe's writing to the Manic Street Preachers writing. But he's
He's not talking about tearing off cocks.
Right, exactly. But he's just on another level here. And I will say that the whole album is not necessarily like that. It does get more oblique, and even on this song there are small bits that are more difficult to grapple with, like tiger run around the tree, follow the leader, run to turn into butter, which
I do really love that part. Though there's something about the rhythm of it, the Zenith on the TV, tiger running around the tree, follow the leader. It's quite playful, and I really like it. But then the second time that comes around, when it's got the "it's not there," there's some stuff he does with his lyrics, and there was another few songs before in previous albums where he's got a really good way of
cadence.
Getting across rhythm.
Cadence,
yes, cadence is excellent word for it.
It's songwriting, man. The band as a whole are excellent, excellent songwriters. That little section, the follow the leader, run to turn into butter. It's that thing again, isn't it? It doesn't make as much tangible sense as the stuff that we've been talking about that has all those external reference points and historical references and stuff. But it does feel in keeping with the internal logic of the song and the things that he is kind of throwing out there. And then there's also the title, which is a play on another song, Begin the Beguine by Cole Porter. And a beguine is a form of music and dance. It's like a slow rumba. The reason for alluding to that, you know, if you want to try and get a hold of that because of the other stuff in the song that you can get a hold of, it's not really kind of there. It's just kind of REM doing their REM thing, you know, I think you can't necessarily get something from every single line of lyrics, but it all feels in keeping with the vibe of the song, right?
They're all vibes
these days.
This one for me, in terms of like, the sound of it, the actual not all the content, which Adam has more eloquently put together than me and my far fewer notes that are the same as what Adam said, but worse. it's definitely more like accessible and like enjoyable and straight in your face and that sort of thing. It's still like, it's not, it's still a bit ploddy. It's not super fast or upbeat. It's a bit like, do you know what I mean? It's a bit, I could do a little bit more energy on my first track on the album. A little touch. Just a little
I think,
touch. Up the BPM a little bit. I don't know. Something about it was a little bit slow on the old tempo for me. Just to like get me right into it. Just to give me an immediate like, whoa.
Really?
But yeah, it's, I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad song, but I could just... Could have done with, I mean, lucky the next one then picks up a little bit more. But
the next one does pick up. I kind of like a strutting rocker as an opener. I'm trying to think of
it is a strut.
I'm trying to think of anything song, else that we've I Send Away the Tigers is not a fast song, and that's a really good opener for that album.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd
say this is the best album opener we've had this season. 100%.
100%. They're good at album openers, though. They always set the tone. Even if you don't really like Feeling Gravity's Pull, it sets the tone of that record, right? As being like murky and, you know, depressing and stuff. And yeah, this is like a strutting rocker. It's about insurgency. It's about politics. It's about seismic changes. I think change is an important point for this album, and obviously there's a song that's all about change, so they're kind of foreshadowing that. I think this is a wonderful opener. I think it really it just gets my juices flowing, do you know what I mean? I love this song. I've there's gigs we'll watch where they open with it, which is, and it's just it's just great.
That makes sense.
And it sounds,
it's
like
called Begin the Begin.
It's good. It also sounds like you can see it being a good, you can see it live, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even though I said it's not, it could do with a little smidge more energy for me, you can still, you get it. You can see that that's live REM, you know, going for it.
The thing you just said is an interesting point, though. If you're going to write a song called Begin the Begin, where the fuck else are you putting it on your album?
Yeah, you put it at the start of the album and you open your gigs with it.
You either put it in the front or you don't put it anywhere, right?
You say that. We saw, you know, Muse recently, and they played the song Intro.
Slap bang in the middle,
like seventh or eighth or something. Yeah.
Prelude should have been played before they came on. Really,
Prelude then Intro.
I think that's how it goes. Yeah,
then One by Metallica.
It's a good point you've made, that Adam, about Feeling Gravity's Pull. As if Lucas, if this isn't enough, you said you weren't sure about the BPM. This is rapid compared to that album opener.
Absolutely.
This is quadruple time.
I'm not saying it's shit by any stretch. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just crank the dial a little smidge.
It's one of the best songs we've heard from REM so far.
I would agree with that. The tempo for Feeling Gravity's Pull is 109.
Three?
Okay. Let me just see. Begin the Begin tempo. It was 109 for Feeling Gravity's Pull. It's giving me the Begin the Beguine song.
It's giving me Begin the Beguine.
Okay, yeah, so 125. So it is, you know, it's also just above your standard rock tempo of 120. It's a little bit faster than that, guys. I love 120. I love 120 BPM. Whenever I'm writing a song and I'm like, I'm going to play it at this speed or whatever, I wonder what this speed is. I start clapping it out. It's always 120. Every single
120,
time.
120, 4-4.
Yeah, every single time it's 120. Isn't that because it's like, isn't it supposed to be roughly the beat of your heart, isn't it? 120.
Your heart, your heart.
Yeah. So this song.
Mine's like, you know, like 48, because I'm really.
Yeah, just resting 48, which I think mine's 220. So what is that actually? It's like 99, then, is it? 48 or 96? 96. I think you'd call that. I think you'd call it 48. Unless it was really slow.
I'm saying it's really slow. I'm saying it's 48.
Oh, okay. Well, this is.
I can slow my
heart
manually. This
song is 5 BPM faster than my heart. So, actually, there's no way. My heart weight's way high. Have you seen how much I weigh? Anyway,
have I seen how much
have
you weigh?
Have you seen it?
Have you seen how much I weigh?
This next song is the second song on Life's Rich Pageant. It's by the same band. It's by REM, and it's called These Days.
To the sea, had a good day.
I think they love the snare sound that they got. I think they fucking love it. This is the first of three songs in a row where the drums come in with just a bang on the snare. They do it three times in a row. I suppose it is, for the first time, a fashionable sound. These are close to the 80s drums, you know?
This is more like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What, the drum sound or the song?
It's all of it. Okay, all cool. of it. This sounds so much like REM.
Oh, God, wait, but that was your problem with the other ones.
Yeah, hang on. Well, let's explore that. Because you've said said that for every album.
Song. Yeah. Right, there's been at least one song every album that I've gone, sounds like REM.
Yeah, but this is a... We haven't really heard them sound exactly like this yet.
Does it sound like what I think I know REM to sound like later?
So maybe it's just catching up, yes.
Because what I described the vocals, it's the verses specifically. It's the cadence. So what Steve was saying about cadence on the last one, about the bit about the tiger's... Yeah, it's the same on the verses on this one. It's like a fast, rambling list.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not feeding off our ears as if I can ever get much into the ocean. You know what I mean? It's very fast, and he's just like line into line into line into line into line into line. And there's always a cadence to it. And I think I recognize that of being something that later REM does.
Well, I don't want to tar you with the brush, but it's Bad Day is obviously going to be your favorite song, isn't it?
Because I think that's what I recognize that as what they sound like, because that song is a list, isn't it? It's like a listy song, and it sounds like that. But maybe that's what I'm just thinking REM sound like.
But obviously, Bad Day is the second time that they kind of do that. Bad Day is kind of a take on It's the End of the World as We Know It, right?
Which is another list song.
Exactly. You love lists. Yeah, We've always said that you love lists.
Also, I like how you use Bad Day as the example and not It's the End of the World as We Know It.
Because we were talking about it on the last episode. Yeah. Bad Day is from this era, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, and that's interesting. Yeah, when he goes, oh, is that it?
Now, what is interesting is that when you're going, oh, it's so fast, the melody's so fast, you were doing it at double the speed that Michael Stipe is doing it. It's not that fast. It sounds like there's so much energy behind it. And whereas...
Well, he's also been quite dense. He's fitting quite a lot of words into it.
He is fitting quite a lot, yeah. But he was on Begin the Begin as well. And where Begin the Begin has that kind of strutting darkness to it, maybe, this is so much more bright, and it's faster, and it feels looser, and it feels anthemic to me. You know, does it feel anthemic to you? I mean, that is very anthemic, I think. I mean
classic REM thing, though. Yes, the chorus does sound big and anthemic, which is what they often do, but as with many of the other ones we've discussed, prefer the verses.
Much more interesting the verses, and that's REM's goal. They were always putting in much more interesting verses than choruses. Choruses are
Get through the chorus.
Yeah, exactly. They were choruses are the easy things that you can repeat, you know, and the verses are where the really interesting stuff is. It's also a great example of Peter Buck's new style of playing guitar. There's like four different guitar parts, and they're all adding a new melody and being played in different ways. A really close listen in headphones, you can pick out two distinct guitar melodies on the left and the right, just in the verses. And I think I was reading this. Peter Buck, who is REM, likened it to a colouring technique. So you get down your outline, and then you go and colour it in. The other thing that he's giving, and it's much more apparent on this record, I think, but we have talked about that he has it, aggression. He's giving aggression in his guitar playing. I can hear him really, really strumming that thing, and then going down to the palm muted thing in the verses, and then the bigger chords. And it's kind of a much more subtle version of what they've always been doing, though, the tension in the verses and the release in the chorus. But because everybody is like, in my opinion, at the top of their game on this record, every single part of it is catchy. Every single part of it is interesting in some way. Every single part of it is in some way emotive, I think. The verse is only a little bit smaller than the chorus, but you're right, Lucas. Just as engaging, if not more engaging, where that sometimes hasn't been the case in the past. And when the song gets to all the people gather, fly to carry each his burden, the song just kind of takes off with the harmonies. There's an extra layer of guitar. It feels like there's this rush into the chorus. And I don't have any word for it other than anthemic, which is obviously hugely added to by the fact that the lyrics are, we are young despite the years, we are concerned, we are hope despite the times, which is just,
I love that.
It's such a, yeah, it's such a rousing sentiment. We are hope despite the times. And obviously he's talking about 80s America, isn't he?
I didn't hear we are concerned. I heard we all consume, which sounds much darker.
Also works, you know. I mean, there's a dark line about consuming on this. There's something really interesting happens in the chorus, I think. There's push and pull in it. That careening, the all of a sudden, it's over the top of a musical part that kind of stops and starts. It doesn't just continue. It's a stop-start chorus that has like four release points. I don't know how to explain that to you, really. Do you want me to just sort of... Do you want me to sort of play it and just sort of see if we can figure it out, and maybe I'll edit this bit out?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Never edit it out. Never edit anything out.
One, two, three, four. That's like a rush. And then it stops and stutters and back into it. See what I mean? It's kind of like a stop-start chorus. They give you like three or four separate releases in every chorus that they do.
And then the verse doesn't stop us for a second. The verse just keeps going.
It's great. That's one of the things that people are talking about when they say that R.E.M. are great songwriters. They're talking about moments like that. It kind of goes beyond a do I like this song or not, and into the notion of, which we need to explore at some point, songwriting being a craft that you can learn and master and be kind of inventive with. You know, it's not necessarily just what the song is saying, it's kind of how it's put together and stuff like that. But also, what is the song saying? I've always seen it as an inspiring call to arms kind of thing.
I genius lyrics didn't give me much on this one, in terms of like the last one was much more clearly about stuff.
Right.
This one, I didn't get as much of, really.
Yeah, I see it more as a, it's like a, you mentioned it just being rousing, but it kind of is. It is that kind of, it's all the people gather, and it's got like, I'm feeding off you, and like all of, like, we are hope, like just all of that kind of stuff.
I love that line, by the way. The all the people gather, fly to carry each his burden.
Each his burden.
It's wonderful.
Really great. I do love that you've already mentioned it, but the we are concern, we are hope. I love that he's using those words. We are concerned, not we're concerned and we're hopeful. It's we are concerned and we are hope despite the time. I like that a lot.
I believe it is concerned.
Is it?
I've heard live versions where it's concerned. Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I like it the other way around. Of we are just
yeah.
We are concern
as a
whole, and we are hope as a whole.
Yeah, yeah. We represent those things. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of just see it as it is quite uplifting.
I think it's kind of from a similar place of Begin the Begin, where like I think the first verse makes reference to potentially like balancing power injustices. I'm not feeding off you. I will rearrange your scales, and then saying if I can, and I can. Which is on the sleeve. The sleeve, the bit next to these days just says "I can." There's self doubt and reassurance at the end there. If I can, and I can. And then Stipe was worried that the lyric was sounding too preachy, so he put in some more kind of like nuanced stuff in there. So in the song about a struggle between the powerful and the powerless, he includes "We have many things in common. Name three," which I think is like the murderer's shoe. From the previous song, we're all just kind of human, you know, at the end of the day. We have many things in common. But then also, in terms of darkness and consuming, the line after that, I believe, is, I wish to eat each one of you. So there's an eat the rich kind of
thing coming through. He originated
the term, obviously.
Yeah, maybe.
I assume the name three was like, if you see a person wearing a band T-shirt, you have to run up to them and ask them
to name three songs. Yeah,
I do like the line. If I had a hat and it sunk, reached down, picked it up, and slapped it on my head.
Oh, it's yanked it up, right?
Yanked.
I know because I saw an interview with Mike Mills. No, not an interview. It's liner notes that he did for a best of, where he said he didn't know what that one word was until about 2005. Like he just figured out that Michael Stipe had a hat and it sunk. He reached down, yanked it up, and slapped it on his head. And I think that, I also think that's another example of like the tangential lyrics, right? That doesn't seem to be very specifically about rising up or hope or concern or anything. He had a hat, Steve. He had to reach down to pick it up, and then he slaps it on his head, you know?
I don't know, it kind of provokes a kind of, you shove your hat on, you get on with it. Like, it fell off, but I just put it back on, just carry on.
So mine is that people would wear baseball caps with, like, slogans or, like, political affiliations on, and that he was maybe talking about, like, oh, my beliefs have lapsed, and now I've picked it up and I've put it back on my head. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I mean. It's tangential, but it's in keeping with the song, where you can take something from that and it'll probably be slightly different depending on who you are.
There's another really good point I have down here. Hold on.
Oh, yeah, go on.
It's true.
Slaps?
It fucks. Yeah. It fucks.
Oh, it slaps and it fucks.
Yeah.
It really does.
Would the line "I will rearrange your I'm not feeding off you I will rearrange your scales" be better if it was "and I'm not feeding off you I'll rearrange your face"? And then he like holds up a fist.
Oh yeah, that'd be confrontational.
Why I gotta?
I think that'd be better.
Yeah.
Stipe said that he wrote it as he was coming out of a very depressive episode, probably during that kind of dark 1985 that they had. He had nearly gone blind because he left a pair of contacts in for too long, and he had to wear a patch over one of his eyes at one point. And as he healed, he kind of felt the depression lifting, and he wrote this song. Steve, you wear contacts. Is that something that happens?
I'm sure back in 1985, the contact lenses weren't as breathable as they are today.
Yes.
And there's a chance they genuinely may have been glass.
Are contact lenses even slightly breathable? Aren't they a solid lens?
Are they not glass?
They're like made of so much like water is in the like in the material. I don't know how to describe it.
But that's again not breathable. Famously, something you can't breathe: water.
Loads of oxygen in
breathable
it.
Breathable is the wrong. I mean, your eyes don't have lungs. I've noticed. So I didn't
speak for yourself.
Speak for yourself, mate. That's why you need glasses and I don't.
And they. But I've left them in after a night out, and you wake up and they are really quite stuck to your eyeball.
I couldn't. Ever since I've heard that story of the drunk, I don't want to repeat it. Doesn't matter.
Well, several times it split and then a part of it has gone behind my eye.
Why?
You've got to kind of push out. No. It happened to my dad once, and they had to get a little metal scoop under his eye to lift it out. And I also got an ulcer in the middle of my eye after Glastonbury 2013 from a dodgy contact lens. Going
just,
in my eye.
Just wear glasses.
I had to go to the eye hospital.
Just wear glasses, I reckon.
That's what I do.
I wear glasses a lot now. Yeah. A lot more than contact lenses because I've got lazier.
Or can I also interest you in not having shit eyes?
Have you considered getting the old laser, actually?
I've considered it. I think I can't. Because of that problem I had, basically, I had a contact lens. I obviously had a scratch on my eye or something. I put the contact lens in. I'm at a festival, so my hands are probably covered in poo. Anyway, I got a particularly bad infection in my eye because...
just absolutely and, covered in poo. Like, you can't see your hands.
Poo fest.
And
I had to be admitted to the eye hospital, and they had to, like, aggressively treat it with eye drops every half an hour for 3 days, so I didn't sleep. But where it's left a kind of scar on my eye now. So I don't think I could get laser treatment.
Wow. So you can't smell. You very nearly couldn't see. You're just trying to knock out all these senses.
You're obviously tone deaf based on your music.
Yeah.
So like...
You've got no taste.
Yeah.
Just based on your clothes.
Yeah.
But I touch so well.
But you touch me. Yeah, you do. Touches. You're so tactile.
anyway, two energetic songs to kick off the album. So they do just bring it down just a touch. Yeah. Just hold off a little bit.
Yeah. Just a touch, good.
Thanks.
But it's Fall on Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a problem, there's a sign, bargain buildings, weights and pulleys, feathers hit the ground.
By the way, we're already like past the first chorus.
Yeah, and out of the chorus in the first 45 seconds I've written. Beautiful. Efficient.
Don't get past the chorus.
Yes, exactly. Well, do you know what? It is another example where I think that's a great chorus. I think it's a soaring, multi-layered, anthemic chorus. That fucking verse, man. The vocal melody on the verse is incredible.
Where he just climbs up and up.
It's so vertical. It's it's great.
It is, but weirdly, for once, maybe a further chorus.
What's that mean? They're both good, I have to say.
What does it mean, Lucas? Sometimes people like different things. Yeah, I don't know. What do you want to do?
Sometimes people are frogs.
You do.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we brought him up.
We've got to bring it back up.
It's a softer vibe. It's more of a folk vibe. It's much more ornate. You know, there's like quite a lot going on. There's these harmonizing guitar lines. There's this melodic bass, of course. It's the vocals for me, this one. Like, we heard them play this on the last commentary that we did, and the verse had a different melody and it had different lyrics. It's on the demo version, so I'm going to play a little bit of that just to compare the two. Less the same from that point. I alluded.
But you can say that's just he's just like a sketch, that isn't it?
No, kind of. That's how they performed it live. I alluded to the first time we heard it. But if you are a songwriter, that original melody that we just heard on the demo makes so much more sense for the song. Like, it's small, it doesn't draw too much attention, and it allows the chorus to be a lift, and it allows the chorus to be the more interesting part of the song. And when Stipe rewrites it, he writes one of the best melodies on the album, because it's that vertical, the climb up, it's so beautiful, it's so interesting. It's not at all where you think a verse melody is going to go. But they don't waste it. In the second verse, that melody from the demo is still there underneath the new melody, creating a counter melody. Oh, cool. With the original lyrics intact. So, and the song is essentially a duet. In the chorus, there's two vocal lines. So there's obviously the big "Fall on Me," and then there's Mike Mills singing "What is it up in the air for?" Like underneath all of that as well. And then Mike Mills takes the lead vocals on the bridge, which
we should play
because it's beautiful. Let me find it.
Fall on me.
It's so happy, sad. It's like,
yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah, it took them a year to write that bridge, to find the version of it that they liked. And, you know, we love REM bridges. And then in the final chorus, there's a third vocal line. There's the fall on me. There's the what is it up in the air for? And then there's Bill Berry who joins in with it's gonna fall. It's gonna fall. So there's like, again, it's just very, very clever songwriting. With these three vocal melodies that are wrapping around two guitar melodies that are finding their way around a bass melody as well. Mad. It's such a mad song.
And again, not something they would have done if they'd stuck with their old way of just go and do it live, baby.
But yeah.
That relies on doing some studio business.
It does,
To practically achieve.
It really pays off. This is a lot of people's favorite REM song. It's a lot of people's favorite REM song from the 80s. We'll talk about it a little bit more when we talk about the reaction to the album. It's kind of it's a standout in the REM canon. REM are a little bit like Radiohead with their set lists. They'll just kind of play whatever they want to play. But Fall on Me became a bit of a staple. I saw them play it live in like 2008. You know, they were still playing this song 30 years after it came out, you know?
Mm.
Is that 30 years? It's 20 years, isn't it? 86, 96. It's like 22 years. Yeah.
No, this is absolutely a standout. It's incredible. I made a joke in episode one of this season. You said, have you heard Fall On Me? And I went, the one that goes, fall on me, don't fall on me. Okay. But it does say fall on me and then don't fall on me.
It does,
in this song. That's actually what it does. Is it like about Chicken Little?
Well, it's that vibe, isn't it? It's the... Yeah. I mean, it's not...
The sky's falling.
It's... Yeah, it's not the same...
I know, it's not about
of
that
thing. It's... Well, so he initially wrote it... Wait for this. He initially wrote it about acid rain and its effect on the environment.
A very 80s and 90s concern. You don't really hear about acid rain anymore, do you?
It's that in quicksand, man. I'm just not.
I thought acid rain was going to be so much more of a threat than it actually was.
It's like in The Simpsons, the idea of like there's the smoke coming out of the nuclear power plant, and then the rain goes through it, and the rain burns through things. Like that's kind of the imagery. Yeah.
I wonder if it's because acid rain is like was never really a concern, or if there's just so much other horrible stuff going on now that acid rain just pales in comparison. You wish we had acid rain, you know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Although Michael Stipe said that the song isn't about acid rain, but I mean, like
the quote from him is, "This song is not about acid rain."
But also, like there is a lot of references to the sky in this song.
There is,
acid rain comes from
your bum.
By the time that he rewrote and added parts, it became more generally about ecological issues and social consciousness. He said, it's not a song about acid rain, he said, it's a general oppression song about the fact that there are a lot of causes out there that need a song that says, don't smash us. And specifically, there are references to the Leaning Tower of Pisa and the guy dropping weights and feathers. And now that is true. That's in the first section of lyrics. There's a problem. Feathers, iron, bargain buildings, weights and pulleys. Feathers hit the ground before the weight can leave the air. Which is, feathers hit the ground before the weight can leave the air. Come on, that's beautiful. It's also scientifically accurate. I think it was, is it Galileo that did that? It's that's how he proved something about air resistance. He was dropping like balls of iron and balls of wood and proving that, you know, if they were just the same size, they fell at the same rate. It was actually air resistance of feathers that keep them that make them fall slower. That's what he's referring to.
That feels really fucking obvious, but of course that's us saying that in 2023.
Yeah, I mean, to Galileo, it was probably fucking novel.
A kilo of steel is heavier than a kilo of feathers.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because one's steel and one is feathers.
Yeah, because steel's heavier than feathers.
I'm on board.
Either
way, I love that he refers to the Leaning Tower of Pisa as a bargain building. He's like, he's like, who the fuck knocked that up?
Bargain building.
And then the second verse has a more directly political line in it, I feel, which is, There's the progress. We have found a way to talk around the problem. I really like that. I think that kind of sums up a lot of politics in general, but probably also what he was feeling in the 80s, you know. Oh, the progress is just that we found a way to not talk about the things that we need to talk about. And then I think there's references to capitalism and, again, claiming or owning American land or owning the natural world. Buy the sky and sell the sky and bleed the sky and tell the sky, don't fall on me. Like Stipe said, please don't bring your power down on me. Please don't smash us. Which is kind of like a dark thought, but also just a beautiful song, I think. I think it's stunning.
It's like a very good song.
It is. It's somewhat like a very good song, yes.
Yeah.
When I listen to the song, one of the things I pick out most about it is just how good it is.
Which song?
Fall on Me by R.E.M.
And how do you know that's by R.E.M.?
Hang on.
To be fair, it might not be on the track listing. So
yeah, I'm just going to double check.
Yeah.
Who fucking knows? It is on there. It's ninth on this track listing.
It's ninth.
Yeah.
Of course.
Really wrong. Really wrong.
Yeah.
Not even the right side of the vinyl.
It's a multiple of three.
Yeah, I suppose so. But it is by R.E.M. Yeah. R.E.M. are just on the front cover there. Don't even see that.
And then just have a little peek.
He's just having a little peek, isn't he? Anyway,
just a quick peek.
We'll put him away.
He's still peeking.
Actually, while we're talking about the track list, the thing next to Fall on Me, you know, the little snatch of something, is Berry Magnets Swallow the Rapture. Not in the
berry
song.
Berry like Bill or?
No, berry as in dig and then cover with soil. Not in the song. But I don't know if that unlocks anything about the song? Berry Magnets Swallow the Rapture?
No.
Great. Okay, cool. So we'll move on. I think the three of us so far, we're three tracks in. I think it's, you know, three thumbs up so far, isn't it?
Yeah, all three of my thumbs.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay, great.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay.
Although Fall on Me, again, a little bit ploddy.
You're not someone who has ever said, like, oh, I like fast music. Like, Radiohead are super ploddy.
I know, but on this album, I don't know. But what I'm finding is on this album, the ones I'm responding to a lot of the time are the more upbeat ones. Having said that, play the next bloody song.
Yeah, I know. Well, but then it's still up, you know, it's anthemic, isn't it? That's the thing. It's big.
Hey, everyone. I'm just going to pause the episode for a second here to introduce to you a brand new album by Squiggo, which, as far as I'm concerned, is music. The album is called Squiggo 1, that's spelt S-K-W-I-G-G-O, and it's out now for you to wrap your ears, eyes and tongue around on all major streaming services, including Spotify, Bandcamp and iTunes. Squiggo has told us his main inspirations were classic PlayStation and PlayStation 2 soundtracks. So think Silent Hill, Gran Turismo, Persona 3, Wipeout, you know, that kind of thing. He's also used a lot of the same synths and sample sources that were used in the creation of those soundtracks. He was also inspired by his recent trip to Japan, particularly the bustling nightlife in Osaka. And yeah, you can really hear that on this album. It's really great. I'll tell you what, let's have a listen to a little bit now. As you can hear, it's an electronica album with influences from a wide range of music outside of video games, including ambient, shoegaze, techno and downtempo. It features a mix of styles and moods. Some songs are sad and nostalgic, those are for me. Some are chill, some might make you want to dance, and don't tell Adam, but there's even a scary one. If you're into old video games or artists like M83, Forte, Burial, Aphex Twin, you're really going to love this. Check it out today. It's a really great time. Search for Squiggo and his album Squiggo 1 on all major streaming platforms now, or click the link in the show notes. Okay, back to the show.
Anyway, yeah, Cuyahoga.
Let's put our heads together to start a new country up. Father tried, erased the parts you didn't like. Let's try to fill it in.
Talk to me then, Lucas. Talk to me.
Best song on the album.
Oh, yeah? It's up there, isn't it? Again, this is another one they were playing. I saw them play it in 2008 and it ripped.
It's because, and this is very unlike me.
Yeah.
It's not about the sound.
Oh.
It paints a word picture.
Oh, Lucas, talk to me. Paints an image,
which actually was ruined when I then read that the song wasn't about what I pictured in my head, but that's fine.
Right,
that's fine. So I just picture
Death of the author.
I picture, yeah, fuck the author. I hated the author. I hated him. I never liked him. I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah.
When I just heard this and I just thought like it was about like an old creek of the Cuyahoga River where they all went to like play as kids and on tire swings and this very like classic American image, very Stephen King sort of like it's old times. Mm-hmm. It's not the today times.
The 50s.
It's
Stand By Me.
Yeah, it's Stand By Me, exactly. And their little tire swing, it's where they swam and it's where they walked and ran and swam. Yeah. It's just it's like a nostalgia song about like their old creek.
Yeah.
In some little town in wherever the fuck it was that they grew up again. I then learned it's like another ecologically minded song about the river that was like enormously polluted. But obviously it's still saying like this is where we walked,
kind of.
But it's not as directly personal, like this is literally a song from this is literally the place where I swam as a child when I was in Stand By Me when I was a child.
there's a big quote from Michael Stipe. I think I brought it up on an episode already. I might just start bringing it up on every episode. He has very famously said, "Do not confuse the singer with the song."
Yeah.
So it's about the people who swam and played, but not necessarily. It's not necessarily little baby Michael. It's little baby Jeffrey.
Sure, he's maybe writing in character. I think I saw a quote from him recently where he said there are around 8 or 10 REM songs that he feels an emotional connection to, like personally.
Oh wow, one of them's Bad Day, right?
Yeah, one of them was Bad Day, of course, because he wanted to be a newscaster.
Yeah, of course.
Love that. Anyway.
Right. I think that all the stuff you're talking about is wrapped up in there. And then there's obviously the ecological stuff. And then I think there's something else as well. Before we get into that, Steve, you must have fucking loved this song. It's absolute Steve bait in it because it's got the nostalgia and it's got the anthem.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, cool, lovely.
Steve, remember when you used to go and swing in the river?
Remember when I was in Stand By Me and It? No, the book of It.
No, we don't want it.
I love that little pre-chorus. This is where we walked, this is where we swam. Just like, you do picture, well, you picture someone walking along with a group. And go and pointing it out, and I like that about it. And it really is another song that really edges you because it really makes you wait for that euphoric chorus.
You've got to wait for that chorus. That's the classic REM trick. You get the pre-chorus, they kick you right back down to the verse again.
No, not yet. Red light. The lyrics at the start though are apparently let's put our heads together and start a new country up.
Yeah,
but I just thought he was trying to rhyme country with together and just kind of goes, start a new country.
That's stupid.
Just sort of tried to make it rhyme. I thought, that's rubbish.
Steve, you're really stupid, mate. I love that. I love that bass intro. The doom, 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 doom. Mm-hmm. That thing. And the little...
Yeah, the bit where it goes, bass!
The little touches of keyboard throughout, it's quite a nuanced production, but then it also kind of like packs that punch. I asked you just to listen to it there. I asked if you could hear it. There's a faint ringing that's kind of more prominent on the right-hand side. There's this really faint guitar feedback that is underneath all of the verses. So it's just adding a little bit of discordance. There's something slightly off. There's something ominous happening, which kind of continues a little bit the vibe of Fall On Me in a couple of ways. One is that it's still anthemic, it still soars, and it's kind of softer than some of the stuff on the album. And it continues to be about nature, right? Kind of. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much about a river. But I don't know.
It's got the name of the river in the fucking name of the song. It is about
and it says
river about
loads.
The river.
Yeah, but, some of it is
something about bad things, about bad things.
Let's talk about it.
There was so that river had a bad day.
Yeah. It's coming up a lot. You'd think it was like their biggest song or something, and I'm pretty sure we're the only three people on the planet who remember it. Anyway,
does Stevie remember it? Does Stevie remember
yeah,
it?
Yeah, because of the music video.
Because of the newscasters. So this song, Cuyahoga, is the song that I mentioned in the last episode where I would have assumed this was about the plight of the Native Americans. And I don't even really think you need to do much work to get there, but we're going to do it anyway. So just hold in your head the British colonists who came over, the people who eventually rebelled against Britain to form a new country, and in doing so, slowly wiped out the people who actually lived on that land. And now just listen to the lyrics. Let's put our heads together, start a new country up. Our father's father's father tried and erased the parts he didn't like. Pretty cut and dry, I think. And he's also bringing in the idea that we should now, in the 80s, which is where we are now, adjust the course of the country and start again. It's the same kind of mode as begin. We need to start over again. And he talks about the destruction of the environment and the people living in it. But he does it with this kind of captivating imagery. And I was so happy when you said imagery, Lucas, because it's all kind of there. Let's try to fill it in. Bank the quarry river swim. We knee skinned it, you and me. We knee skinned that river red. And there's a childish nature to referring to environmental destruction as knee skinning. But also, I think you're spot on, Lucas, man. I think it brings a nostalgia into it. He may well be talking about being a child, playing in that river, literally grazing a knee and bleeding. And he's looking back on that fondly in light of the ecological disaster that befell the Cuyahoga River, which is a real river in Ohio. Cuyahoga is believed to mean crooked river from the Mohawk name Cuyagaga. At various times in the 20th century, it has been one of the most polluted rivers in the United States. Time magazine in the 1950s described it as a river that oozes rather than flows. And at one point, the river was so polluted, it caught fire. At 13 points, the river has been so polluted that it caught fire.
Literally,
and that's where the line in the song. Yeah, literally ablaze. That's where the line in the song, "We'll burn the river down," comes from.
Yeah.
There was also a stretch of it that was entirely devoid of fish.
Jesus.
100% Christ. Devoid of any fish.
What are we doing to this planet, man? What did they do
to us? In the 80s.
In the 80s. Well, it's the same now, isn't it? Anyway.
It's all fine now.
There's a lament to the song, which I think you guys both picked up to as well. This is where we walked. This is where we swam. But then he also maybe makes reference to, or I've always taken this, the land of ancient peoples being repurposed into tourist attractions. You know, these places that become national parks or become places that people visit for recreation were once where people lived. And he's saying, you can take a picture here, take a souvenir. And then he even switches up the perspective. So it no longer sounds like, it doesn't sound like something a child is fondly remembering. It's more directly about the people whose land it was. This is where they walked, swam, hunted, danced, and sang. Take a picture here. Take a souvenir. That's the bit that's on the cover as well. On the back cover, it says, next to Cuyahoga, it says, equals a dying river. This is where they walked, swam, hunted, danced, sang. And there's loads more stuff that just kind of ties into that kind of the destruction of another culture kind of vibe. This land is the land of ours. This river runs red over it. Rewrite the book and rule the pages, saving face secured in faith. We are not your allies. We cannot defend is probably quite a big one if you're thinking about, you know, the colonists coming over from Britain to to the Americas. We are not your allies. We cannot defend. Ah, it's brutal. Mm. It's always meant that to me, and it took me a little while to figure out how to sum that up for this episode, because I think there's a lot of knotty ideas all wrapped up in one song. And then I was reading one of the books that I'm using for research, and there's this quote that you very nearly quoted directly, Steve, from Michael Stipe about this song, where he just says, "We destroyed a culture to build ours." That's what Cuyahoga is about.
Mm.
So that sums it up nice, and I shouldn't have bothered. And I'll edit it out actually.
I think that is obviously a completely cromulent take.
Yeah.
But because for me, of all the imagery of like nostalgic childhood playing, I more picture the more literal read of we used to play in this river and then we fucked it up because we fucked the planet up. Silly sausages.
Which is there.
Like, silly idiots. There.
That's 100% the thing that he's getting at. But he's, yeah, but there's that other thing that's kind of behind it as well. Yeah,
For cleverer people. But I can just take like the basic read.
I don't think that's for cleverer people, because that's the intent that he's putting into the song. And for years and years and years, I saw it as exactly the same way as you, Lucas. And it's only in the last couple of years that I'm like, oh, this has another sort of thing behind it, you know. There's a darker sort of story behind this.
My very first initial read of the song, the first time I heard it, that we spoke, was it in Murmur? Murmur?
Murmur.
Which one was it where we talked about how Murmur. People now go to the album artwork and they get pictures and it's like a tourist destination? What's that? The trellis thing?
Oh yeah, the trellis that becomes famous because REM had it on the front.
Because
of
REM. Yeah. So, my first listen was this is the band saying, "This is where we walked and swam," and it's the band pointing out So I thought it was like a really weird self introspective thing about them,
which I suppose is not a million miles away from Lucas's read. If you want to continue down the line of like Michael Stipe is talking about his own childhood, but there's something that's more removed about it, I think, where he very rarely talks about himself. I think, you know, I said, like, he said there's like 8 or 10 songs that he's like personally connected to in the REM thing. I think we've talked about 4 of them already. I think that some of them happened like quite early on,
and then one of them's Bad Day.
There's a very bad day.
He was having
a bad day.
There's a
very specific.
I don't. The great thing is, I don't know when we'll get. Well, I do know roughly when we're going to get to Bad Day. I don't know what album it'll be on, but I know the rough time period.
It's not on an album.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
wait, what? It's just like an A-side.
It's the standalone single from the Best Of in 2003. Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah. It's not. Oh. It's not like a big song for them.
It's a massive song.
Do you want to hear something about Bad Day? Actually, we got time. I've seen them twice. I've seen them live 2 times, right? And even back in the day, I was like looking at set lists and like figuring out like, oh, what am I going to see? First time I saw them, a couple of gigs beforehand, they were opening with this song called Leave, okay, which is this 7-minute banger that opens ambient and then turns into like this full like rock song, right? And I was like, what a cool fucking opener. That's amazing. Went to see them. It was the only night on the tour they opened with Bad Day. Okay, I'm like, okay, fine. It's still my first time seeing REM. That's great. When I saw them in 2008, I was looking at the set list and I was like, oh, Christ, they're opening with I Took Your Name from Monster. That's a really cool, strutting kind of like opener. They opened with Bad Day.
That's great.
Well annoying.
It's because it's their biggest song.
It's one of their biggest songs.
You've just proven my point.
You've mentioned this line already, Adam, about knee skinned, but like it's such a very specifically good example on this song of when Michael Stipe kind of creates a phrase that sounds real, but he's just sort of changed it up and like, we knee skinned rather than we skinned our knees. Like it's a thing. I really like
it's
that.
A verb. To knee skin.
Now, this is interesting. I think it might be a cultural thing. I think it is a thing in America. I think that is what it's called. I don't think
knee skin.
I don't think Stipe has like coined that.
Like to have a catch, which is a term that does not exist in the UK.
Yeah, I guess
you
so.
And your dad are going to have a catch. Like that's not a verb.
Well, I grew up thinking that my dad uses the word scraze. For a scratch or a
scrape or graze. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. On your knee. So I thought scraze was a real word, but it just turns out it's a word my dad made up.
Wouldn't fit in the song either, would it? we scrazed that river red. It's not really the same thing.
That's enough of that. After that song, we should end the episode.
After that song, bloody
after
hell.
After that one, yeah, after that one, we should end the episode.
Especially that one.
Especially that one. Especially that one.
Because of the thing, because of the big thing.
I'd like to think that we got exactly halfway through the record. I think that would be
exciting.
Do you
think so? Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah, that would be really nice.
Yeah, I bet it doesn't work out that way, but it would be nice.
I bet it doesn't, but it would be nice, wouldn't it? It would be nice. What should we do? We should dedicate this episode. We should dedicate it to Oliver Charles, actually, as far as I'm concerned, because he's one of our biggest mates subscribers over on Patreon.
I think I should dedicate this one to me, actually.
What? No. I'm just going to pull rank. This is Oliver Charles episode. Okay. That's what it is.
Can I have one dedicated to me at some point? I'm technically a Patreon subscriber. Like,
are you? I don't think so.
Well, I have the Patreon feed of episodes.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I get it for free, but I still subscribe to that feed. So I feel like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, okay. At some point, yeah, sure. Why not?
Thanks for subscribing, Oliver. You're my best friend.
Oh, is that part of the thing now? Is that they become your best friend?
We're going to be losing subscribers by the day.
Okay. But I'm going to gain so many best friends.
So many new friends.
Hey, let's have an email. Let's have
an electronic email
from one of our listeners called Cassio. And they've dictated here, not the watch or the keyboard. So that's helpful. Thank you, Cassio. Right. Cassio says, hello, guys. I just wanted to write and say hello and say I love your podcast. Oh, that's nice. I don't know exactly how I came across it, but I'm completely hooked and speed running through the episodes, though in normal speed, to catch up with the current one. I love the format of the show. I can always relate to all your different points of view. Sometimes I'm like Lucas. I don't care about this shit and this song is crap, is what they've quoted you saying.
Yeah. That's your catchphrase,
isn't it? We'll put it on a t-shirt.
Just your face and those words.
I don't care about this shit.
That implies that I'm describing myself as shit or crap.
Yeah, well, it's on the t-shirt now. There's nothing we can do about it. Other times I'm like Adam, quote, this is sacred and beautiful. And ultimately, I'm more in the middle, like Steve, though with extra sensitive sense of smell. Anyway.
Oh. I mean, at least they've got one, I guess.
Anyway, I had a mildly funny story about Radiohead I thought I would share. The first time I saw them live was in Dublin. Why did I say it like that?
I don't know. I liked it.
Dublin.
Own it.
In this open-air venue in the middle of a forest or something. It was amazing. But being Ireland, we had all seasons in one day. It started clear, then it was windy, then it was raining, then sunny again. But then suddenly something strange happened. The crowd started to get really excited and clap and laugh and cheer. But it was in between songs and the band wasn't doing anything. The band noticed that too, looked at the audience, looked past them and started smiling too. I was very confused. Then I noticed, like a wave, the crowd started to turn around and look backwards, opposite to the band. Then I finally turned round, and suddenly I realised what that was about. A giant double rainbow had appeared in the sky on the In Rainbows tour. And then Tom said on the microphone, oh yeah, we made that especially for you. How amazing is that? Anyway, loving the show. I just started the Kid A episode. I discovered Radiohead with Fake Plastic Trees and Creep. Then on that same year, there is OK Computer and I got obsessed. Needless to say, I was really interested in what you had to say about this amazing album. And I loved how much extra stuff you explained on the show. The next phase of Radiohead is a bit of a limbo for me. I love some songs, but hate others. And in general, I have no idea on which album they are. So it will be interesting to rediscover these blurry albums with your guidance. Thanks for the great show. And if you need ideas for the next band to talk about, I'd love to hear you talking about either Portishead, Godspeed You Black Emperor, or Smashing Pumpkins. Cheers, Cassio. I don't know anything about Smashing Pumpkins, I don't think, guys. Don't think I know anything.
Despite all my rage, I am still just a bit of the cake.
I don't really know. Didn't make it any clearer for me, to be honest with you, Steve.
In a cave.
Anyway, brings us to the end of another episode. Thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Our next episode is out next Monday, and we promise we will conclude the deep dive into the fourth REM album. Maybe.
if you're lucky.
But before we do that, come and let us know what you think of what we've talked about so far. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at What Is Music Pod, TikTok at What Is Music. And if you'd like to send something a little bit longer, like Cassio did, we can read it out on the show. Email us, whatismusicpod@gmail.com. And if you liked what you heard here and thought, I'd love to hear more of that, head over to our Patreon page. You're going to find all kinds of extra podcast shows. There's one where we're revisiting Manic Street Preachers, one with all kinds of different artists, genres, and eras to make themed playlists, bonus commentaries, music discussion episodes, ad-free episodes of this show. It's a pretty amazing Discord community and the spirit of Christmas all year round. You can head to patreon.com/whatismusicpod or follow the link in the show notes for up to 2 podcast episodes every single week of your life. There are also other ways that you can support us if you'd like to. You could buy some of our merchandise over at whatismusicpod.redbubble.com or send us a little one-off donation over on coffee.com/whatismusic. The best way to support us is still doing what you're doing right now, which is listening to us. And you can rate the show. You can subscribe to the show. Share it with your friends. All of that stuff. That about does it. Thank you again for listening. We will see you next week. But for now, it's the end of the episode as we know it. And I feel pretty good, actually. I feel pretty good. For the time of night it is, I feel pretty good.
I feel like a waiter to go.
Again, just no clearer.
I feel like...
chicken tonight?
Chicken. Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. I love it.
chicken tonight. Yes.